Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the Zudio in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys flapping gums and being chums, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, it is part two of the reassumption rebootle of Red Dawn. So last week, if you hopefully were listening, we started off and we did a reassumption, which is basically just a movie review of a movie from long past or recent past, but just past.
Yep.
And we want to see if it still holds up. And we did Red Dawn 1984, the original Red Dawn.
Yes.
Last week. And the fun thing we've been doing now is we like to do movies that were classics or cult classics or nerd classics or whatever. And if they were rebooted, we'll also reassume the reboot. So now we're calling it the Reassumption Rebootle. So
Rebootle, yes.
So you get a two-for-one reassumption over the course of two podcasts. Yay!
And it's interesting because we mentioned last episode, you and I are sort of anti-reboot, but I do like the fact that we're still open to them. We did this with Clash of the Titans a couple episodes ago, so if you want to go back and check that out, we did the same thing here. We didn't call it a rebootle, but that's absolutely part of the series. But it's fun to see, like, not only take a second look at the original, but also see how somebody redoes it, because it can go either way. Interesting.
Yes. Because we didn't call it rebootle before because we just thought of it. So rebootle, rebootle TM circle R, assuming positions, I mean, assuming productions, LLC. Thank you.
Trademark on right record, now. Yes.
Trademark right now. Rebootle. So like we said, the 1984 Red Dawn is actually, I read as I was reading about 2012's Red Dawn, which is the reboot.
Mm-hmm.
They called the 1984 Red Dawn a cult classic. And so,
okay,
I guess I'm in said cult because to me it was always just like that awesome action movie from 84.
Yep.
So I didn't know that it was a cult classic. I guess it's like, you know, someone who has always been in a Rocky Horror Picture Show and someone's like, it's a cult classic. And they're like, I always liked it.
I only know of the original Red Dawn as the original PG-13 movie, so that's really the only reason it's in my sort of like zeitgeist memory. But
yeah,
do we know if it like made its money back? Was it a?
Oh yeah, no, it was. Okay. It was a hit action film.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay,
it made money. It was a hit. Yeah, that's the thing too. Is that to me, I see where you're going. Usually, when stuff is cult, quote unquote, it's something that wasn't really huge when it came out, but had legs.
Yes.
And just stayed popular. I think this was one of those movies that it did decent in the theaters, and then it also had legs because the VHS. And didn't Knott Scott, our producer, say that he came across it on HBO
when he was
a kid?
Yeah, that was the conversation we were having. HBO, that like apparently that they had rights to that movie. So when HBO first started, that was one of the like eight movies that they played on repeat. Yes.
You gave it, what did you give it, 4 out of 8 slices?
Yeah, I gave 50%? I started at 3 slices. I gave it 4 slices because of the practical like explosions and just action moviness of it. So
yes,
it is lower on the scale. I think that's my lowest rating so far, but I still had a good time.
Yeah, and I had an extra nostalgia goggle slice. I gave it 5 out of 8 slices for the 1984 Red Dawn.
Yeah.
So you can go back and listen to that, even though we spoiled what our rating was, but whatever. Today, we're doing the 2012 reboot of Red Dawn, starring Thor himself, Chris Hemsworth, a kid from Hunger Games, and some other people.
Yes. Absolutely some other people. But
so,
no wait, pause. I have to pick on you because you did the same thing I do. I call him Chris Hemsworth, but it's Chris Hemsworth. There's no
Chris
L.
There's no L. Chris Hemsworth.
I want to say Hemsworth. Like that's,
I do too.
Oh, but it's Hemsworth, yes. It is
Hemsworth.
Thor himself is really the only star of this movie.
Yes, Chris Hemsworth. So, Mikey, what is 2012 Red Dawn about?
Well, surprise, I gave the description for the 1984 one as commies invade high school America in the flyover states. And the reboot is much the same. Commies take over Midwest America, but this time it's in Spokane or Seattle. They never really mention it specifically. We never get a real title card, but it's still the same setup. They held true to the original, and it's an invading force. This time it's North Korea, air quotes, bunny quotes. It is North Korea taking over I guess it's Washington this time. I don't know. They never really say. We never get a title card, but it's communists taking over Americans, and the title cards for the original was like, the world is in collapse and NATO has failed and there's all this justification for it. This time the title cards for 2012 just say, the economy has gone down and there's now cyber attacks. So this is the reason for all this happening.
Yeah,
now economic collapse and cyber attacks is the reason for this movie.
Yeah, the original one started off with some title cards kind of explaining to what was going on. Mm-hmm. This one started off with like some crazy news montage with like Obama talking and Biden talking and Hillary Clinton talking and
so
all
weird.
The, yeah, and I was trying to follow it, but basically they were like, stuff's in turmoil, so things happened.
Yes.
And you're right, it is supposed to be in Spokane, Washington, I believe, because that is the police cars in it, I think, were it was Spokane Police Department.
Okay.
And there is one point where they show like a Seattle snow globe with a space needle.
There you go. Yep.
So those are your hints, but blink and you'll miss it. And that's most of this movie. So
that is most of this movie.
Yeah. So before we get into it, there's some interesting backstory about this movie. As we said, starring Chris Hemsworth, that one dude from Hunger Games, and then a bunch of other people who I've never seen before or since.
Since.
And directed by Dan Bradley, who is I think this might have been his first feature. He's like a second unit director who does action scenes.
Yeah.
Which
if you go
was
to
apparent watching this movie.
Yeah, it is apparent, but if you go to his IMDb, he's like the stunt coordinator for a lot of awesome movies, but it's stunt coordinator. I don't know what the progression was for him to go from stunt coordinator to director of feature film, but here we are.
One of the interesting things about this is that even though it came out in 2012, it was filmed in 2009.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was filmed before Chris Hemsworth did Thor. And it was filmed, as far as I can tell, by looking at the timing, it looked like the initial filming started in September of 2009. And
way before Thor, yeah.
Right. And as far as I can tell, they didn't announce who was going to be playing Thor until later in 2009.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, only Chris Hemsworth and his agent know if he knew at the time he was doing Red Dawn that he was going to be Thor. But there's a good chance that he didn't know. And this was done before he was the, like, marquee big letters Chris Hemsworth,
yeah,
you know?
Before he got that MCU money and the privilege that comes along with it. Yep.
So what's interesting is that MGM was going through some bankruptcy, so they shelved a whole bunch of movies. And this was one of the movies that got shelved.
Okay.
So it was basically like, you know, here's this movie. We don't know how well it's going to do. Let's just put out ones we know are going to hit because we're having financial troubles. So these other ones, we're just going to have to shelve them for a while. Well, then Chris Hemsworth becomes Thor, and Thor is huge, like every MCU movie was huge. And suddenly he is Chris Hemsworth, marquee name that we can't remember. There's no L in it. We should read the marquee better. Right? And someone at MGM is like, hey, don't we have a movie with that guy on the shelf over there?
Let's make some money. Yeah, we have a movie with that guy.
Yeah, we have a movie with that guy. Let's put this movie out. And then they were like, oh, wait, we really can't put this movie out. And why is that, Mikey? It's because it originally wasn't North Korea. Who originally in the original Red Dawn that was filmed in 2009, who was invading America?
It was China. Uh-oh.
Yes, it was China. And I don't know why no one thought of it in 2009, but between 2009 and 2012, when this finally came out, apparently that was enough time for transition for China to become one of the major movie markets in the world.
I'm with you, yes. And also, like, with the success of the MCU and all the superhero movies, China's always been the secondary market. Like, Tom Cruise is huge in China. Jackie Chan, huge in China. Like, that's always been a thing. But for some reason, the superhero movies, as much as they've taken off in Hollywood, they've taken off in China. So I totally get that. Like, Thor came out. Chris Hemsworth, Chris Hemsworth became an international superstar overnight just by being the perfect Thor. Shout out to him. He does a great Thor. Nothing against him. But they did realize that, oh, China is now a valid market. We really can't pitch a movie where they're the bad guys. So we got to go back. We got to fix it.
So they spent $1 million.
Holy crap.
To go in there, and every Chinese flag they turned to a North Korean flag, and there's a lot of flags in this movie.
Yes.
Every arm patch that had a Chinese flag on it, they had to change to a North Korean patch.
Okay.
And they redubbed all the Chinese actors to make them speak Korean. Korean instead of Chinese. And they had to mess with the mouth flaps too, so it would match.
Oh, I believe it.
So that's what $1 million gets you.
I believe it. I'll preface this now. I don't know if this is racist, but did they get Korean actors? Because it looks like it's just Chinese actors.
No, it was the same actors. They didn't reshoot it.
Okay.
They just changed
the dialogue.
Flaps,
changed the mouth over. Okay.
As far as I can tell, I don't know. There's this movie, spoiler alert. Thank you, Scott. This movie was not a huge hit, and when stuff isn't a huge hit or a cult classic, there's not a whole lot written about it. You can only really find just some basics on Wikipedia and articles that were written at the time.
Yep.
But this movie did not do well. It didn't make its money back in the theater at all. So it grossed $50.9 million.
Okay.
And the budget was $65
million. Oh, didn't even make their money back.
So I guess the budget was probably initially $64 million, and they had to add that extra million to try and fix it.
To try and fix it. Oh, but it didn't work.
It didn't work. Oh. So now let's get into this movie. And it's going to be kind of fun because if you listen to the Red Dawn 1984 one we did, we kind of go through plot points just to go with this because that's how we took our notes.
Yep.
And this one's going to be a little more fun because we'll be able to compare and contrast this one with the 1984 one.
Yes.
So that'll be fun. So how does this movie start off? Well, the 1984 one started off, like we said, here's this all-American town. They show you, give you a shot of the all-American town. And here's Patrick Swayze in his truck with Charlie Sheen, his brother, and one of his buddies. And he's dropping them off at school.
Yep.
And they mentioned the football game last night that didn't go well. And this one is the football game that didn't go well.
We actually get to see it. We actually get some sports in here right at the start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically the night before. And initially I was like, oh, cool. That's a neat take. It's the night before. And then at first I got nervous and I'm like, are they going to Hollywood this up and he's going to win the game? Because he's not supposed to win the game. He's supposed to lose the game. That was the point.
But also, just to add to it, it was always that. In the original, Patrick Swayze was like the letdown star. Like he was the star that made a mistake, right? Now it's his little brother. They sort of switched it, right?
No, in the original one, Patrick Swayze was the superstar school legend, and his little brother was the one who had a hard time living up to his older brother.
Okay, so they kept that the same, but
they kept it the same, yeah.
There is more focus on the little brother in the reboot, yes.
Right.
But we get to see him play and sort of mess up.
Yeah, he plays and he's basically is kind of a cowboy and doesn't listen to the coach and thinks he knows best and ends up losing the game that way. So that's your little bit of character for there. Now, I'm telling you right now, we said in 1980, the 1984 one, we had a hard time keeping track of any of the characters' names and we constantly just called them by the famous face that they were.
Yep.
And the problem with this one is the only two people I recognize are Chris Hemsworth and that one dude from Hunger Games. And then,
about Josh Hutcherson. Yes, Josh Hutcherson.
Yeah, right.
I can't even tell you his character name because they do just the same job as they did the original. It's like you get a name, but nobody's going to remember.
I would argue a worse job.
Fair enough.
Seriously.
And then, like, I am a younger generation, so I do know Josh Peck, who is the younger brother football star that tries to be the superhero and loses. But that's Josh Peck. That's from Drake and Josh on the Disney Channel. Like, I can't see him as anything other than that. Like, he's a Disney kid.
I didn't know who he was. He's playing the Charlie Sheen character.
He is.
So let's kind of do these parallels. So he's playing the Charlie Sheen character. Chris Hemsworth is playing the Patrick Swayze character.
Yep.
And they're the Eckert brothers.
Yep.
Jed and Matt Eckert. So we know that. And
everybody else you can sort of just fill in as stand-in characters, I guess. No.
I know. No, you're right. You're right. So it started off and I was like, okay, here we go. But he better lose the game. And sure enough, he does lose the game. So I'm like, okay, they're being faithful, but they started the night before. Cool. You know, put a little twist on it. You're putting in a little thing. Everything's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, then we get like Matt Eckert is sitting there waiting for his ride, his girlfriend to pick him up, and getting teased by the other team's kids on the bus. Everything so far, I'm like, hey, this is going well. And then he gets in the car with his girlfriend, and it's just kind of like, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, he tries to like make a move on her or something, and she's not having any of it. And then we immediately go over to a bar, and there we see Chris Hemsworth. See, we originally saw Chris Hemsworth. He was like watching the game and saw that his brother was messing up.
Yes.
Talked to his dad. We find out their dad's a cop who's there at the game. And I'm going to keep saying Chris Hemsworth instead of Jed. But Chris Hemsworth like rolls his eyes and is like, oh, he's being a cowboy again. And I'm just going to go have some beers.
Yes.
And so then we go to the bar and there he's in the bar. And this is where we get the first hard break.
Yes.
From the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, like we said, the original movie, we didn't know what Patrick Swayze's character did, really. We just knew that he used to go to the high school. It's implied that he was a superstar jock there. And then he was going to work after he dropped his brother off. What that work was, I don't know.
It involved a pickup truck. That's all we know.
But yeah, so he could have been doing anything. So who knows? But we find out right away that this version of Jed Eckert is on leave from the Marines.
He's an ex-Marine, Semper Fi.
Yeah, he's not even an ex-Marine. He's an active duty Marine. He was on leave.
Oh, on leave. Okay, I thought he was an ex-Marine. I thought...
No, he was on leave. He was an active duty Marine. So suddenly you're like, wait a minute. Part of the whole point of the original Red Dawn was that it was average kids taking on the evil empire.
Very much so.
Because... Yeah. America, right?
Because we can overcome any obstacle. But I do have to say, in the reboot's defense, I think we've already showed our hand on what we think about this movie. But in the reboot's defense, the fact that they do give him some military experience does sort of justify the later actions. But it is just sort of mentioned in passing. He's like, he's on leave. He's an ex-Marine. Whatever. It's Thor. Just buy into it.
Yeah, I guess, but the point, and this is something I came to a realization. I would have brought it up last episode if I had thought of it, but the story really is almost a amped up Rambo version of the 1980 Miracle on Ice hockey thing, where a bunch of college kids playing hockey, and this was only 4 years before the movie came out. A bunch of college kids from the USA playing hockey beat the Russian hockey team, who are unbeatable. They were supposed to be amateurs, and Russia said they were amateurs, but they were all professionals. And a lot of them were like active duty Red Army soldiers too. So it's kind of interesting that 1984 Red Dawn was almost kind of like a parallel to that kind of story. Like, our kids can overcome your professional soldiers.
Yeah. Because America's the best. Yes.
Right. And that was you know what? That really wasn't here in this movie at all. The undercut of it wasn't there. So it was just kind of like this whole thing all the way through seemed like there was just some check boxes they had on a list.
Yep.
And they were just like, okay, yeah. Like, they watched the original movie and they're like, I like that part. And I like that part. And I like that part. And I like that part. So let's figure out how to fit those in somewhere.
I'm incredibly with you, because we made the comment last episode that the original sort of moved at a breakneck pace. Like, we're not doing any development. We're not doing any exposition. It's just, here's the scene. Here's the next scene. We're going to give you one line to let you know what's going on. And then we're on to the next scene. The reboot does that, like, the original is 2 hours long, the reboot is an hour and a half. So they did that at 75% rate.
I know. It's like it was literally like someone went down onto their app and hit the like two times,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We're hitting all these check boxes. Let's go. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking too. I was like, man, Mikey thought the original Red Dawn was like quick.
Ooh.
This was really breakneck. This was just on speed.
Oh. And maybe I'm putting my cards out a little bit early, but one of my complaints, I'll put this right out on Front Street, but one of my complaints is that this movie succeeds on the premise that you are familiar with the original. You know, it counts on the fact that you are a Red Dawn fan. You saw it on HBO growing up. You saw it, you know, 7 times a week when they played it at 8 p.m. on their schedule. But I can't, like, we watched the original last week, so I can only imagine what somebody who is unfamiliar with the original, hasn't seen anything about the 1984 version, I can't imagine what they think of this movie. It's got to be, like, ridiculous. But
you are so correct. You are so right. Because in some ways, this is like the Cliff Notes version of the 1984 one.
Absolutely.
Or you know what this is? You know what? I'm coming up with this right now because this is on the Cliff Notes parallel.
Do it.
This is like your buddy's notes from class while you were out sick. like he's like you're taking his notes, and this is the book report you write over this thing called Red Dawn, and it's kind of like what the thing was.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff missing and a lot of stuff not right, and you're kind of skimming over things.
He was focused on the cute girl and he forgot to take notes for the 12 minutes into the lecture, but yeah.
Well, speaking of cute girl, right away we get another thing that was like, wait a minute, is this supposed to be Jennifer Grey's character here at the bar?
Yep.
And so Jed Ecker gets approached by, and again, I couldn't even tell you what the character's name was in either movie. I just know it as Jennifer Grey's character in the original movie. I don't know who this actress is who plays, no offense, ma'am. I don't know who you are, but I don't know.
It's Adrian Palicki, I will say that
and
much.
And what's the character's name? What was the character's name?
Tony.
Yes. That's right. Tony. Tony and Erica are, yes. Tony is Jennifer Grey and Erica is Leah Thompson.
Exactly.
So, and then they said Tony and I remembered, okay, that's not Erica, so this must supposed to be Jennifer Grey's character. And then she's like, don't you remember me? We used to go camping together. And I was like, okay, that's a new thing, but whatever, sure. And then he was like, oh, I was so much older than you, you've grown up type thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? Like we said in the original one, and even more so in this one, they're just kind of like, I think we're supposed to do this right now.
Yeah,
like this is what character development is, right? Sure, fine, I guess.
Here's two lines of conversation, so you get the history of these two characters, and you know it automatically. And yes, it is playing on tropes that everybody is familiar with. It is the girl at camp that was sort of had her eyes on Thor, and Thor was too much of a superstar to notice. But even still, it's like 10 seconds, and you're like, okay, I guess that's it. Anyway.
Thor. Yeah, let's keep calling him Thor.
Absolutely.
Throughout this. That's the best because we can't say his last name properly, so we'll just call him Thor. And then like it's a bar, right? And for some reason, I guess it must be a bar and grill. That it seemed to me to be a hard bar, but then all the high school kids after the game are coming in there, which okay.
Hello.
Sure.
That's small town America. If you're a football star, you can go drink at the local watering hole. Right. Why not? Yeah.
Right. And then we find out that this is when we kind of find out real quick that Maddie's girlfriend is actually Erica, who is the Leah Thompson character.
Yep.
So they're putting everyone together at the jump. They're not even, because in the original movie, like they were given them later, which we made fun of too, because it was kind of silly how it happened. But
the precious cargo, yes.
Yeah. In this one, it was just like, they know each other already. That's easier, right? Good. So they're in the bar, and we get, like you said, 30 seconds of character development, and then the lights go out, and they're like, oh, the lights went out. There's a power outage. Oh, well. And I think it's supposed to be foreboding, but it's not. The way it was shot was not foreboding at all. The way it was shot was, the lights went out.
It's the end of the party. That means we got to go home. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Yeah.
Right. So they went home and we see their police officer dad again. He's like, yeah, there was a blackout. I gotta go out on duty to make sure like no one crashes into each other or whatever. That was the perfect opportunity to be like, hey, sons, there's something weird going on here.
Yeah.
You know, but that was not, not at all. It was like, the lights are out. I got to get and do and go cop stuff now. See you later.
Yep. This is normal Spokane action and activity.
Yeah. I'll see you later.
See you in the morning.
And then we get like, you know, another 30 seconds of like, these two brothers, I don't think they get along, but whatever.
Yep. And there's a dead mom somewhere in the mix, but only in hints.
Yeah. They do the thing where they go across the picture to show like there's a picture on the wall to show you that they had a mom, which is like, yeah, I'm sure they had a mom.
Yep.
but whatever. And
that'll be explained later in 10 seconds that happens in the second act. But
right. And then we go straight to explosions.
Explosions.
They have their little kind of like moment of tension,
mm-hmm.
Which was fine because the two of them are decent enough actors. But geez, Louise, could they be suffocated more? All the actors in this, like I've heard the term actors saying that, you know, they're given room to breathe.
I get it.
Have you heard that quote mm-hmm. before?
Yep.
Given room to breathe. Yeah. These actors were all suffocated. I don't think doesn't matter how good of an actor you were. There was no breathing room at all.
The directors had the 1984 checklist of Red Dawn that they had to hit, and they were going to hit those squares. And
yeah, I'm telling you, a lot of this came across as like school play level
stuff. Oh, I believe it. Yeah.
It was like, here's the line I'm supposed to say now. I mean, I don't know if they were rushing or what. It just seemed like the director was like, yeah, that's good. Next.
Yep.
Right?
We've got our exposition. Now to the action. And the action is, instead of high school being blown up with RPGs out in a field in Colorado. Now we're in the suburbs of Seattle, and they're coming down in the morning. They're parachuting into suburbs. Here comes my first real nitpick. So they in the 10 seconds that they've set up Thor's background, they said he's an ex-Marine, right? Or an active Marine. Not an ex-Marine. Right. He's an active Marine. And yet he sleeps soundly through explosions. Like he wakes up surprised.
Right, right, right.
If he's
If
he's an active Marine, he's going to be awake at the first vibration. Like something's going on.
You are so 100% correct. He even said in the bar that he had been like in Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever. He'd been in the sand. He'd been in the stuff. And yeah, that at the first explosion, he would have been like up out of his off the couch in a crowd. I mean, it would have been, but no, he's sitting there sleeping like a baby.
He's the last one to wake up.
House is shaking. He was the last one to wake up. His brother basically had to wake him up, being like, "Something's going on." Yeah, you are right. The first explosion, and then here's the. This was like I was kind of on board at this point.
As soon
that was like you said, that was the first crack in the dike.
Yep.
And then the next one to me was when they went outside and there's paratroopers coming down in suburbs.
Why is that a bad thing?
Again, I told you last time that I'm a tabletop war gamer. I'm a military history buff. Yep. I read a lot of stuff about military history and watch documentaries and all these things. What the first Red Dawn got right is the paratroopers were dropping in a football field and like the field around it.
So
like in the original Red Dawn, the football field kind of was part of an even bigger field.
Yeah.
You know, open area.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a big open area that didn't have a proper stadium. It just had some bleachers and whatever. And that's where they were dropping the paratroopers. That's where you drop paratroopers. You drop paratroopers in big open areas. Why? Because they're coming down on parachutes. If you come down in suburbs on parachutes, where there's trees and houses.
Oh, that's right.
You're going to get caught on them. It's a paratrooper's worst nightmare. Every World War II paratrooper's worst nightmare was going towards a town or woods orchards or whatever. You get caught and you get trapped up there and then you'd get shot you don't do that. There's a famous World War II paratrooper story where the guy got caught. He started drifting towards town.
Okay.
And he got caught on a church steeple and was stuck up there for like a super long time. But anyway, yeah, that was the first thing I was like, what are they doing? That is like terrible. And then, you know, explosions, right? Because immediately some like anti-aircraft rocket goes up and hits one of the paratrooper planes, which are way too low for anyway. It's one of the paratrooper planes.
Yep.
And it blows up in the neighborhood. And then that's when Chris Hemsworth goes, oh, I'm a Marine, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, here's I'm a Marine.
Here's all this training I forgot about.
Yeah. Here, get in my pickup truck and let's get out of here, right?
Yes. Well, a couple of points. Just in this movie's favor, just to try and give it a little bit of a silver lining, we're focused on positivity here. It is a bad thing that they dropped in the suburbs, but they did answer your critique. Like, they don't waste ammo. It is really just paratroopers dropping in to patrol. Like, there's one guy that shoots up the truck, but everybody else is sort of dropping in on their mission.
Yes, you are absolutely right. They started gathering up their stuff. They started finding their squad. And if there were people there, they just rounded them up. And that was right. They didn't immediately just start blasting civilians.
And they're doing their mission. But also, like, we do get the advantage of 2012 Hollywood in that we get to see planes crashing together and huge explosions. I know it's not practical, but it still looks really cool. Like, it's all happening real fast, but it still looks awesome. So,
yes. So they go driving off in their truck. And now here's something else that I was like, what is happening right now? And this should have been the first clue in that everything is moving too fast.
Yes.
They turn a corner and there's all these enemy vehicles there.
Yeah. They have barricades and
How did they get them down there so fast?
They paratrooped. I guess that's the verb, but they paratrooped faster than the rest of them. Those were the first ones.
Now, listen, I know that you can drop equipment. You can drop vehicles. They can drop vehicles, parachute down vehicles. They do it. Our army does it, but you need a very large area, like desert area, to pull that kind of stuff off. You can't do that in the middle of Spokane, Washington. And then added to that, you actively have your paratroopers dropping and there's already Humvees of yours like parked in giant rows down the street. It's like, what? How? Wait, what? How? How?
Because reasons. It's an action movie. Don't think about it too hard. We got the next scene to get to.
You have to take your brain out for this movie. I don't know.
But it was cool to see. It wasn't the exact same pickup truck, but I am glad they sort of did the homage, like Thor had Patrick Swayze's pickup. Like, it happens to be, it can go off-road when it needs to. It saves the day. They pick up everybody. Everybody hops in the back.
Like, they pick up everybody. Everyone happens to live on the same street within like three houses of each other.
Because that's how it is. Wolverines. We live in the same neighborhood. Go Wolverines.
Except for Erica. They can't get to Erica. Oh, no.
Not yet. Plot twist.
The blonde model girl who is... anyway, we'll get into it. I think.
I have comments. We'll get into,
I know you do. Because they did a disservice to a character... years later that should make all females angry, I think, personally.
Same.
Anyway.
Yep. But they pick up everybody.
They pick up everybody and then drive off. And I'm like, okay, cool. We're going to get the scene where they drive to the gas station. No.
The surplus store. Yeah.
The surplus store. I wanted the crazy gas station that has guns in it.
Nope. Does not happen in this movie.
Now, rightly so, though, we did think that was silly. So they probably thought that was silly.
Yep.
So... They do run into their dad at some point, and their dad tells them to get the heck out of there and go out into the woods or whatever.
Yep.
So he said, go to the cabin.
Apparently
they have a cabin out in the woods. So they drive out to the cabin with all their friends and some extra people they put up. And I don't know who any of these people are. That's why I say the dude from Hunger Games, because he's the only one I recognize. All the rest of them. I don't even know if they say their names. They're just people there with them. And people who jumped in the back of his pickup truck who weren't Koreans.
They're absolutely red shirts. And I didn't go back to watch this, but I'm absolutely convinced that one of those high school students died in the first car crash with the pickup truck. Like, you see somebody go through a windshield, but then they never show it again. And I'm not sure if it's one of their friends. I'm not sure if it's an enemy. But
I think it was an enemy because that's why the North Korean general dude was so angry.
Okay.
Because one of his guys got killed in the car wreck. That's why the governor general in charge of the area was so mad that one of his soldiers got killed by Thor in a pickup truck that he declared a vendetta against him and will hunt him down.
That's General Cho. If that gives him enough motivation to take out the Wolverines, I guess that's what we're going on because, man, we're just going on threads at this point.
Well,
30
I know,
minutes
that's
into the movie.
I know. It is threads because the thing was, in the original one, the reason why they were after him is because they were missing and they knew they were the ones who took all the crap from the store.
Yep.
So they knew that there was like this whole group of armed civilians out there.
Yes.
Because that was the C. Thomas Howell's dad was the one who ran the store. We later find out that C. Thomas Howell's dad was killed because they found out they had taken all that stuff from the store.
Yep.
And that's why they were after him, which makes 100% sense.
It does.
That they're like, there's a whole bunch of civilians out there that were aided by this guy and he gave them tons of guns and ammo and equipment. We have to find them because they're dangerous. But this version is, hey, you killed one of my guys in a car wreck, random blonde dude. I'm going to hunt you down. That makes no sense.
Oh, it does make no sense, but that is our transition into the next point. We're going to jump ahead a little bit here, but they totally did away with the re-education camp Avenge Me scene. Like, that does not exist in this reboot.
No. And they had an opportunity to do it.
They had an opportunity to do it, but instead they go to the cabin. They get their supplies, which is logical in this movie. There's only so many supplies, but now it's this General Cho that has a personal vendetta, and he brings the fathers out. Like, he gives them a megaphone. He's like, "Speak to your sons in the woods," which I guess they know they're there. So, okay,
that was what was so funny to me. It was like, you have like a platoon of troops with you. Why don't you just have them search the woods for the stupid kids?
Because then the movie would be over in 40 minutes.
I know. That drove me crazy. They're like, I know these kids are out in the woods here, so I'm going to have the cop dad, who I don't know how he knew that cop was the dad of the kid that killed his soldier.
Yep.
And then the mayor, whose son was over there, who that's kind of holding along to what was going on in the original one, sort of. And they have the megaphone. They're like, hey, kids, we know you're out there and haven't even done anything yet and really are of no danger other than the fact that they literally mentioned that one of his soldiers was killed. Yeah, in a car accident. So I didn't know what was happening anymore, dude. I was like, what is going on right now?
it's a little, I brought this up earlier. It's a little bit of the factor that I think they're relying a little too heavily, in my opinion, but they're relying on the fact that you know the original. So you're going to be okay with whatever changes they make to the reboot.
I guess.
But if you only watch this movie as the reboot, it makes
no
sense.
So confused. Makes zero sense how Cho knows that those are the fathers. Because I don't think we need to bother looking it up right now, but what the heck is the population of Spokane, Washington? It's more than like 1,000 people.
Yep.
Definitely.
Yep.
It's like thousands, it might be hundreds of thousands of people. So you're like, there's these. It makes no sense. But anyway, they totally wasted the fact that, so first of all, you got the mayor dad, who is like a collaborator, basically, who's like, come on out, everything will be fine. And then they give it over to the Eckert's dad, the sheriff, and he basically goes off and says, like, fight these guys to the death. And I was waiting for him to do like, avenge us. Avenge
I was waiting
me.
For it. Avenge
but
me.
Nope,
yes.
Nope. He just gets shot in the head by General Cho.
Well, yes, he does get shot in the head, but I think this is PC 2012 version trying to correct the 1984 version, which is, we made the comment about 1984 original was that he's a bad dad. He's like, I know I was a bad dad, but I raised you right so you could, you know, grow up and fight commies, you know?
Yeah.
But now it's the total PC dad. He's like, there's going to be some tough decisions out there, but I'm going to say this over the megaphone. I love you. Whatever happens, I love you. And then they also, like, they cram in two of the original motifs together in that he says, I love you, and then he gets shot, and then his kids are watching because they're right there in the woods and undiscovered by the enemy, which is poor planning. But
yes,
they're in the woods, and Thor covers up his brother's mouth, like, in the act to say, don't cry, don't cry. Dad wouldn't want to see you cry.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's true.
But they're jamming everything together.
But they could have put him saying don't cry in there. I don't know, whatever. It seems like you should have had some of that. I just realized, I looked at my notes and I totally forgot that part of this, it does actually, I forgot that it halfway does make sense, but also doesn't make sense, but halfway does make sense. It's that jerk Pete, whoever Pete was, that new guy Pete. So we kind of skipped over it, but they had extra people who aren't characters in the original movie. So yeah. I don't know who these people were, but there's this dude, Pete. And Pete goes into the camper that's next to the cabin mm-hmm. and finds a pistol. And then at some point, some more friends show up in a truck out of nowhere. I don't know who they were. We just had to know that they knew them because they acted like they knew them. And Pete gets nervous and shoots at the truck that's coming up of their friends.
That's true.
And then Thor gets mad at him and is like, give me the pistol. And Pete's like, I'm not going to do it. And then Thor's him down to the ground and just rips the pistol out of his hand, right? So then Pete got mad and then went and got General Cho to say they're up there. So that's how he probably found out whose parents they are, because Pete probably knew whose parents were whose.
And that makes sense.
Because I remember now when they were in the woods, they're like, hey, that's Pete.
And it harkens back to the original, because we did have the face-off. In the original, it was only 10 seconds of the quick exposition, but we did have the face-off between, like, the class president and the jock being like, we should give in and just do what the Russians want. And then Patrick Swayze was like, no, we fight, you know?
Yeah.
That's Pete's role in this new one. He is, like, the class president nerd, be like, we should side with them. They're going to be okay, you know? We should give in to their demands and we'll survive. But even still, Thor's like, nope. We fight.
Yes. So anyway, sorry, movie. I forgot about Pete.
Everybody should forget about Pete. He's a traitor.
Yes.
He's the reason the second act happens.
Pete was the traitor. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah. So they didn't bother looking in the woods. And then suddenly, this is where, like, as soon as, like, they go away, which, and it's funny because General Cho does, like, this look around. He kind of looks around like, well, I hope they heard that. I hope they saw me shoot their dad.
Fingers crossed, I guess.
Fingers crossed. I won't bother sending a squad to sweep the forest, but whatever.
Yep.
That still didn't make any sense, even though the father thing does make sense now because I forgot about Pete.
But even still, if North Korea is the enemy, absolutely North Korea would bring their enemy face to face. Like, if we're going to torture you by shooting your parents and your legacy, we want to make you watch. Like, that is...
Yeah.
A hardcore regime, you know?
Yeah. But they would, like, make extra sure that they knew the kids were there.
Yeah.
Which also means you could have just captured them. Ugh. But whatever. Like you said, movie over.
It's Hollywood. There's reasons. You'll have to figure them out later. Yeah.
So then literally smash cut to a voiceover montage.
Yes.
Of Thor explaining, like, everything that they're going to do and training. And it was, like, so fast cut. And it was so, like, what we need now is a montage without the music and just Chris Hemsworth saying all kinds of things that I don't remember. But
it's time for a montage.
Yes.
I love it. I've said it before on the podcast. We are big fans of the montage, but this is absolutely where they used it to their advantage. Like, all the Marine training that Chris Hemsworth has, he now imparts to his brother and his brother's group of high school friends in the span of 30 seconds. Be like, here's how you use high-powered weapons. Here's strategy. Ridiculous.
It is ridiculous because, you know, they miss out again on the opportunity of the, like, what's defilade fire? What's a flank? That funny moment we had in the original. Well, don't bother. Just montage, and then, like, you start off really bad at a thing and then start getting better.
Oh, shout out MacGruber. You did it the best. Yes.
Oh my gosh. So silly. And then we get like a series of them doing things that is like box checking.
Yes.
Like, the first one was like, hey, remember that trapdoor thing that Mikey thought was like kind of weird? Let's tweet that again.
Let's bring it back. Yeah.
It was like, so they did the trapdoor thing, yep. You know, with the, I think they were trying to have a humorous moment because they got guns from like a drug dealer or something. And the guns were like really inaccurate, and he kept having to walk closer and closer to the tree to hit it.
That was true, but
I think that was supposed to be funny.
Okay, I'll take it as funny, but if it's foreshadowing, like they show him showing the accuracy of weapons, but that never comes up again in the rest of the movie.
Never comes up again.
Never.
Because those were the weapons they used in the trapdoor up from the ground scene.
Oh, okay, okay.
And they killed all of the North Koreans and took their stuff from them. So. So the totally ineffective weapon was wholly effective.
Because why not? I guess this is where I put in my tangent, but here's my one comment about the enemy of this movie. So in the original, in the 1984 version, we know it's Russians with the help of Cubans coming up through Mexico. Like,
right.
We at least get a little bit of backstory. They go sightseeing in America. We get to know the enemy.
Right.
You've told me the backstory of how this was originally China. And then they had to spend $1 million to make it North Korea.
Right.
That's $1 million wasted because this enemy could be anybody. Like, we don't ever get to interact with the enemy at all. Like, they're bringing out their dads, you know, they're shooting them down. They're hunting down kids in the woods because of one soldier lost. But we never, like, the enemy could be anybody in this movie. It really does not matter.
You're right, because in the original Red Dawn, we said that one of the characters that had the most development was the Cuban general.
Absolutely.
And they kept going back to scenes with him dealing with the Russians, and we kept going back. They kept going back to that pool over and over again. In this one, I think there was only, like, one scene where General Cho talked to anybody.
That's it. And there's one scene where Thor mentions that there's also Russians with blue hats and they're the Specknavs, you know, they're the special forces, but that's it.
That's it. Yeah. No, that was one of the check boxes. and then this middle part here with the trapdoor thing and all that stuff.
Yep.
I didn't know what the heck was going on because they were just like going like, hey, they're doing stuff now.
Yes.
And it was like, hey, they're doing stuff. And for some random reason, they spray paint Wolverines on stuff. And this was totally what you're saying. Like, if you had never seen the 1984 one, you would have no idea what that was about. Why are they spray painting Wolverines all over the place?
Because you're familiar with the old one. So, you know, it has to happen.
But we have to kind of half treat this movie like you didn't. So
true.
That's a huge failure.
And I think it's what you're saying. The director of this movie was like a stunt coordinator for a whole bunch of older movies. So I think that's where like he decided to flex his muscles a little bit or show his pedigree, I guess. But the whole second act of this movie is just action scenes, and they're great. Just, like it's Hollywood at its prime. It's explosions. It's gunfire. But there's nothing going on. It's just like
there's nothing going on. It's so random. It's just them causing chaos and mayhem, right?
Yeah.
And then in between, then we go hit our next box check where they do the hunting scene.
Oh, yes.
Because the Hunger Games kid is playing C. Thomas Howell's character.
And Josh Hutchinson, I just got to say his name. He's a good actor. And, yes, it is Hunger Games.
You know, and they have him shoot the deer. And they get the blood out, and they make him drink the blood. And then he's like, is this supposed to be symbolic? And he's like, no, we never drink the blood, you dummy. I was like, what the heck? You know what? They did a mechanical owl thing to me on this one.
Oh,
too,
yeah.
Right?
Not Bobo. You know? Buno? What was Clash of the
Bubo.
Titans? Bubo. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Bubo. Like, in the reboot of Clash of the Titans, they show you the thing, and they're like, we don't need it.
They throw it away.
The whole point of, like, and as silly as 1984's Red Dawn is at times, that scene meant something. That scene was showing how C. Thomas Howell, that character did have development from like this nice goofy kid who wore his Star Wars hat, who's probably a geek, and he turns into a stone cold killer in that movie to the point that he's the one who shoots his friend.
Yeah.
You know, he turns into a murderer. So him drinking the deer blood and being like, oh, it doesn't, not that bad, and then making it a ceremony is important in that movie because it's supposed to represent him turning into like a hunter.
Yeah, it's symbolic. It has meaning.
Yeah, and in this one it has no meaning at all other than a prank.
And they laugh at him. They laugh at us. Be like, oh, we never did that. Like, are you serious? Like, why are you even referencing the scene if you're not going to take it seriously? Oh.
Right.
They're thumbing their nose at the original, which I get it, but oh, man.
Yeah, I know. And then, so here's another point I have on here. I know we're jumping around, but the movie started jumping around. So,
yes.
And if anyone's a huge fan of this movie who's listening to this, okay. But anyway.
Yeah, good for you, but sorry, we're not on your side.
So at one point, we get to see Pete the Collaborator again.
Yes.
And he's wearing like some North Korean collaborator uniform at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's supposed to be the checkbox of the scene where they blow up like the Friendship Center.
Oh, okay.
Where even though Tony doesn't go in there to do it, but anyway, whatever. So much of this movie, the missing half hour from this movie, I wonder if it is actually missing, because there's so many things that happen in this movie. I'm like, how did this person know that? And one of the things is that this dude, Pete, this is all we know of Pete. Pete was up at the cabin with him.
Mm-hmm.
He got mad at Thor for taking the pistol away from him.
Yes.
Went and got General Cho to tell them that these kids were up in the woods and I know who their dads are. And then that whole thing happened. Right. That's all we know about Pete. And now we see him again and he's like wearing a North Korean collaborator uniform. So Pete's a traitor jerk. Right. That's all we know of Pete. Pete sees one of the kids from the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And now all Pete should know is that, hey, that's one of the kids from the cabin. But what does Pete say? It's the Wolverines.
How does he know?
Exactly. I have it written in my notes. How does he know who they are? How does he know that, like, again, Spokane, Washington, Calumet, Colorado, they made Calumet a tiny town.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It wouldn't be that much of a leap for Pete to put two and two together. But Spokane, I know, is a big city.
Mm-hmm.
It has lots of people in it. The partisans who are going around spraying Wolverines on it could be anybody.
Yes.
Could be anybody. But he sees one of those kids from the cabin and he goes, it's the Wolverines.
I guess that's him being typecast as a jerk.
But
so.
then he blows up, so it doesn't matter.
He does get his just desserts at the end, but he fulfills the Hollywood role of, oh, I'm helping you. Like, I'm on your side, but I'm helping you identify the good guys. Those are them.
Those were his last words, by the way. It's the Wolverines. Bloom.
Good riddance, because Pete stole their supplies. They justified all the supplies they had at the cabin, and Pete stole half of them. So good riddance. Yes. I'm glad you got blown up.
And speaking of supplies, there was this one part. It's product placement, but it was almost funny to me.
Okay.
When they, like, robbed the subway, it was kind of funny.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It was like, oh, this is almost amusing. And when they're sitting there, like, burping and fat over eating, like, trash bags full of Subway, it's kind of amusing.
And the joke of, like, give me all your breads. Like, what kind of bread do you want? Like, that's the typical Subway response. But it's just like, just give me all of it, as long as it's fresh. Oh, I love it.
And they fill up a bucket, like a bucket of suicide of all the sodas.
Oh, suicides. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's when you hit all the nozzles.
Yeah. Well, yeah, all the nozzles.
Yep.
I was like, oh, this is almost funny. Right? And then right after that, they try to do a little character development there when they're sitting around after they eat the subway, I guess.
Yeah, because they have 10 seconds to kill, so why not have a conversation between your characters?
And then, because they start talking about all the stuff they miss, and like one of the kids goes, I miss playing Call of Duty, and he's like, we're living Call of Duty,
or something
like that.
Yeah.
Okay, buddy.
And then, of course, they lay on the wait, because I think that scene ends with, I miss my mom, and it's like, and then Josh Peck, Thor's younger brother, is like, well, my mom's dead, so now I got to go brood in the darkness later on.
I know. Oh, my God. The Charlie Sheen version of that character was so much better.
Yes. Then
this version of Matt Eckert, I couldn't stand him. I couldn't stand him at all.
I get it.
I wanted him to just fail so bad. And this leads into the next part is that, well, first of all, in between there was a box checking part where they're fighting again and they have the Wolverines thing where he holds the thing up in the air.
Oh, that's right.
You know?
Yep.
And that was like so forced, but whatever. There you go. We did it. We need it for the poster. Hey, guy who was in Hunger Games, hold it up and say Wolverines. Hooray.
Wolverine. Right?
And then My next note is the Jed and Matt Eckert forced relationship issues.
Yes.
You know, that was like the scene where it was like, hey, I need to talk to you about this. And it was so forced, and it was so just soap opera. It was like a soap opera scene in the middle of it, almost. Like the way it was acted and the way it was, I don't know, man.
No,
it was,
even with the football scene they set up in the beginning of the movie, they show you that he's not a team player. And then, of course, like the touching moment between brothers is like, hey, you got to be a team player. If you go off and be the superstar, then people get killed. You saw that with your friend Greg, blah, blah, blah. Like, you have to be a team player. If you want to be on Wolverines, you have to be a Wolverine, blah, blah, blah. But it takes place in 10 seconds. Like, ridiculous.
It takes place in 10 seconds. And I just, the relationship in the original one between Jed and Matt,
yes,
Swayze and Charlie Sheen, it was such a genuine brotherly relationship. You could tell that he looked up to his bigger brother. You could tell that the older brother loved his younger brother a lot, and they'd been through a lot together. And this one was like, it was like a, we've lost our mom and we lost our mom earlier. Now we've lost our dad. It's the two of us, brothers till we die. And it was, you could feel it because they're really good actors too.
Absolutely.
And this one, it was like, mom died and you left, so I'm mad at you. And
it's that millennial angst. Like, you can't tell me what to do.
I guess it was just, whatever. I didn't like it, but you could tell what they were trying to go for, because this led to him trying to rescue his girlfriend in the middle of a firefight and leading to the death of some random guy who had a random girlfriend. I don't know who these characters were, who these people were, but all I know is that him going off being a cowboy got this kid killed, and this kid's girlfriend's mad now. And it was so ridiculous that he basically like went up to her and was like, sorry, I killed your boyfriend. And she's like,
peace
out. It's all good. Peace out, buddy. It was like, what?
She gave him a peace sign, like, it's the end times. It's okay. I forgive you. But, like,
yeah, man,
that's a member of the Wolverines. You can't leave him behind. Like, I get they're trying to make a point, but it all seems so forced and so just turned up to 11. And also, with this comment, like, he goes to rescue his girlfriend, Erica, and this leads into my comment that Erica and Tony are now, as much as they were precious cargo in the original, they let them be part of the team and become strong females. For this movie, they're just like your typical Hollywood, like, oh, they're female bait. It's what you go after. They have no agency. They have no nothing. It's just, here's the pretty girls you're protecting. Ugh, gross.
No, yes. It really annoyed me, because you would think that this would do better than 1984, a movie that's considered like a right-wing paragon movie, that gun lovers love this movie. But in the 1984 movie, the precious cargo turns into a precious asset, a team member who will fight with you, who Tony is like the runner.
Yeah.
She's brave. She'll like do all this crazy stuff. She blows up so much stuff. She she's the scout. Mm-hmm. And then Erica over there is like, she's been through stuff. It's implied that she got assaulted, sexually assaulted. It's implied.
Yep.
And she's like dark, but she still has such a kind heart when it comes to the downed pilot and everything, but she's tough, and there's no damsel in them. They're a valuable member of the team. And in this movie, they turn Leia Thompson into this blonde, this actress is a blonde model. She's a model before she's an actress.
Yep.
And no offense to her, she's very pretty. I get it, but she is damsel in distress in this movie. She's, help me, I've been captured by the North Koreans. I'm chained up in a bus. Maddie, oh, help me. Oh, my blonde damselness. You have to save me, Maddie. Oh. I agree with you. It's a regression. It's a regression.
And all for cheap thrills. Like, I know this movie is going at a quick pace, but they give them one scene where the two girls do get to fire RPGs into, like, a base. I think in the beginning, end of the second act, maybe beginning of the third act. We're going fast because this movie goes fast, but that's it. Like, they get one scene of comeuppance, but other than that, it's just like your foible for the narrative to move along. That's like 1988, like you're saying, 1984 did it way better than you. Why not just continue that theme?
Right. I know. Mad. Yeah, I know. Well, so let's do one thing that they did do better in this movie.
Okay.
Grenades worked right in this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
So we were making fun of the Hollywood grenades in the original Red Dawn.
Yes.
And this one, they didn't have a whole lot of grenades, first of all.
Nope.
But the grenades that they did have worked like real grenades work. So props to you there.
Yeah, I guess practical effects. Good job on the stunt team. You know, they threw a grenade in a room and it just blew the people in the room back. But it was contained to that room, which is how grenades work. So props to them.
And another thing that this movie did something that I requested in our last episode.
What was that?
They had special forces guys show up.
Oh, they did. That's right.
Right. In the original one, they mentioned that special forces guys might come to help them.
Yes.
And I said, oh, that would be cool. I'd like to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, they did have special forces guys come. And guess what? It really wasn't that cool.
It really wasn't.
Really wasn't that cool. So that, and one other thing before we start really getting into it.
Yes.
I'm looking for, here's another silver line. Here's another good thing. They had one good Easter egg in here that wasn't a box check, that was very good. And as a fan of the original movie, I was like, they needed to do more of that.
Okay.
They're hiding out in a mine, an old mine, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's where their hideout was.
Yep.
They're listening to the radio and they had the exact same stuff on the radio that they had in the original one.
The chairs against the wall.
Yes, the chairs against the wall.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but it's the same thing that was in the original.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
But it made me curious. Is that actually, like, did they, like, I know that's a throwback to the original, but does the original use that because it's like a throwback to World War II? Does it actually mean something? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, for like the French and Dutch resistance, and I'm going to history buff here.
Lay it
the
on
Dutch
me.
The French resistance gets a lot of airplay because French people like to build it up, but it was the the Dutch resistance. Those were the killers, if you learn about the Dutch resistance in World War II. But yes, they had Radio Free America because you can't stop radio broadcasts.
Yep.
And they'd play music and stuff like that, and they had propaganda and stuff. And then they would have, like, these coded things that they would say in there.
Okay.
That meant something to the resistance people.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But we don't know specifically what the chair against the wall means.
No, we
Interesting.
Don't.
Interesting. I'm sure there's a tangent there. I hope somebody... Yeah. I'll probably go research it, but if somebody else wants to research it, that's awesome, too.
So here's the thing is, like we said, the second act is just a bunch of action scenes.
That's it.
You'd hardly know what's going on. They're spray painting Wolverines around, checking boxes. Like, this happened in the movie, so we'll do this. This happened in the movie, we'll do this.
Yep.
We get the damsel in distress scene we didn't like, and then they're back at their mine bunker, and then somehow the North Koreans figured out where they were, right?
Yep.
And basically, like, dropped a nuclear bomber. What did they do? You know what I'm saying?
They bombed the hideout because they have...
But when they came out of the hideout, did you see what the landscape looked like? It looked like there was no trees anymore. There was just stumps. It looked like a scene from Terminator or something, like one of those future scenes. It looked like they dropped a nuclear bomb on their mine, basically. I mean, it was ridiculous.
I guess it kind of goes along with Indy 4. Like, Indy gets into the lead-lined refrigerator and survives the nuclear blast. So if they're in an underground mine, I guess nuclear bombs don't apply to them because they're so far underground. But
I don't think it was a nuclear bomb. What I'm saying is that it was, the devastation was ridiculous. It was just crazy.
But I will say, here we're giving this movie a silver lining when it applies.
Yes.
It was cool that the reason that the North Koreans tracked them down was, like, they thought it was a stab wound to one of the Wolverines, but it turned out to be a tracker. Like, that's Hollywood cool. I will admit that.
Yes, that is Hollywood cool, but the way they figure it out near the end of the movie is the dumbest way ever. But anyway, so we'll get there in a second.
We're almost done here.
So the reason why the Special Forces guys showed up is because they needed the Wolverines' help to get this special telephone, because apparently the way they were able to invade America is that they had this EMP weapon that knocked everything out. So all electronics and stuff, even though that kid's phone worked through the entire movie and somehow remained charged through the entire movie.
I think
I don't know what kind of phone he had.
probably a Nokia or a Motorola, one of the old school ones.
But that stays charged for like 3 months or however long it was supposed to be going on.
It's Hollywood. It's Hollywood cell phone. It stays charged as long as it needs to.
Because we have, like, at least in the original Red Dawn, they kept showing what month it was.
Exactly.
So you knew time was passing. This one, I guess it happened in, like, a week.
You wouldn't know. It could happen in a week. It could happen a month. I never tell you.
I think it probably happened in a week because his phone stayed charged the whole time.
Yeah.
Because when they were talking to the Special Forces guys and they're like, hey, they have this special communications phone and we want to capture one. And it looks like this. And he's like, oh, I have a picture of that on my phone.
Yes.
And it's like, here, is this it? And they're like, that's it. Let's go get it. Right? That's what.
Because, of course, we only have an hour and 30 minutes to tell this story. So we got to move this along. You have a special phone and it works and it does what we need it to. So here we go.
So it's at the police station. So they basically, we guess they make a plan. We never see it. They just go ahead and raid the police station.
Well, like, to be fair, they do bring back, as a checkbox, I guess, to the original, they bring back, you're saying Special Forces, but with those Special Forces comes Andy Tanner.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
The old school veteran who's seen this before and knows how to do it.
Right.
But in this movie, he just shows up in the third act. Like, they don't even get the second act training montage of him telling strategy. It's just...
No, that's because Chris Hemsworth did it already.
He already knows it. But we do have Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I have to shout out to him because I love him. But he's wasted in this movie. And he just shows up and he's like, we're looking for the Wolverines, and props to him. He kind of gets dismayed when he realizes that the Wolverines are all high school kids. So
yeah,
that's appropriate. Props to them for getting it right for, I guess, 5 seconds. But he's like, okay, we're the Special Forces. You're the Wolverines. We're going to get this done. We got to go after this little green box. Here we go. Like, no explanation. Everybody's on board. Let's go.
And there's three Special Forces guys. He's one of them. There's one guy whose job is just to make dumb quip lines the entire time. Even his death line is a dumb quip, too.
All of it. Okay, I'll say this to you because I didn't recognize it. But I guess the one-liner they give him is that he calls everybody a motard.
Yeah.
I looked it up, and apparently a motard is a really loud Marine, like somebody that just runs his mouth. But it just seems like they wanted to use motard as like an insert slang word that they could get away with. Oh, it was so weird. Oh, anyway. Yeah.
I know.
Don't be such a motard, but yes.
Yes. So they invade the police station. Mm-hmm. And apparently, you know what I also noticed? I never saw anyone reload. They had like everyone had unlimited ammo. No one ever reloaded.
Because this is not a Michael Mann movie. If this was a Michael Mann movie, there would be proper magazines and proper reload functions.
Yes.
But that's not the movie we signed up for with the reboot of Red Dawn.
So apparently the MacGuffin of this is that there's three wires, and the wires must lead to this portable phone.
The magic green box, of course.
That's portable.
Yes.
What? It doesn't make... anyway, that made no sense to me. But anyway, they split up into three. You never split the party. But anyway... And they go after it. And then you get things like them driving a tank into the police station to try and stop them.
Yep.
You get General Cho trying to get away, and you get the standoff with him and Thor, sort of. The fight is so fast, dude. It's like, what is going on? The cuts are so fast. Then
we got 20 minutes left in the movie. We got to get these fights over with. Hurry up.
And they just happen to be fighting in his dad's old office. So
of course.
And he knows his dad's combination to the gun he keeps under his desk.
Of course.
Because, you know, I tell my kids the combinations to everything, and especially a gun safe. But anyway, whatever.
Go Wolverines.
So that gets it, right? And so, surprise, surprise, they get away with the football. And then suddenly, it's like, I don't even know what's going on. Everything's happening so fast. Seriously. Everything's happening so fast, right?
Yep.
And then we have like the, hey, we've been successful scene near the end.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get, here's Tony, the desirable damsel. I'm finally going to kiss Thor. And then he like takes it in the head, right?
Just out of the blue, like through the window. Just a headshot. Bam. He's done.
And it's like, oh no, here's the Spetsnaz again. Remember them? They're back. The Russians, who actually know what they're doing.
Yeah, we showed them for one scene. Guess what? They're important in the third act.
Yeah, they're important now. And let's get the heck out of here. So they get the heck out. Now, this is one of the wholly disappointing things. so many of them got away. It drove me crazy. The original Red Dawn, it's like everybody but two of them die.
They have, I forget the name of it, but they have the rock with everybody's name on it.
Like, yes.
They do two shots on that.
Yes. Like, it was all about the sacrifice and stuff. Yeah. And the story was supposed to have been told by Erica, who got away with that one other guy who we forget because he wasn't famous back then.
Not C. Thomas Howell. Yes. The other guy.
No, not C. Thomas Howell. Because there was so much like sacrifice and stuff in the original one. In this one, the only sacrifice was Jed. Yep. And it was so disappointing. He wasn't even a blaze of glory. It was like, I'm finally going to kiss the good. What?
Thanks for being in our movie, Chris Hemsworth, for 90 minutes. We got 20 minutes left, but we ran out of budget to pay you. So we're going to cut you from the last 20 minutes. That's it.
Right. And then we get that scene where they're like, how did they find that? It's daytime all of a sudden. They're driving down this road in Spokane. They're like, how did they find us? And then suddenly the kid from Hunger Games just looks over and he's like, hey, I think they put a tracker in you. Let's look and see. It was so. It felt like a role playing game.
Yes.
Where the DM wasn't savvy enough, so the player knew exactly what was going on.
Yep.
Or didn't want to play along. Or like, no, you know what? This is what I'm trying to say. It's like in a role playing game where the player's character doesn't know what this monster is, but the player does know what this monster is.
Yes.
So suddenly his character's like, this is how you kill the monster.
Yeah.
And you as the DM have to go like, dude, your character doesn't know that.
That's you knowledge. That's not player knowledge. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Cause like as the audience, we know that he got stabbed, but it was kind of weird stabbing. And I brought it up earlier where it seemed like they were placing a tracker rather than just stabbing him with a knife. But for the people in the movie, Hunger Games, he lifts up his shirt and he's like, that doesn't look like a knife wound. That looks like a tracker wound. It's like, how do you know that?
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, he's going to shoot him now.
That's how it is. That's the original.
That's how it is.
Yeah.
But no, because it's nowadays and they treat women like damsels. So we're going to go ahead and do this thing where we can't have a friend kill another friend anymore.
Not PC. Yep.
It's not PC, even though it's fine to treat women like they do in this movie, but whatever. But so Daryl, who in the original got shot next to the Russian guy in a very dramatic, controversial scene, just says like, I'll just stay here, guys. Give me our most powerful weapon and I'll fight him off. Yep. And then they drive away and he's like, bye. And
bye.
They're like, bye. And that's
peace, son.
Like the biggest sacrifice that happens in the movie.
I don't think we even see him die. Like he doesn't even get blown up.
Yeah. No, there's no awesome scene where he like holds off a platoon of North Koreans while his friends get away so they can get the football over to free America. No, there's not that scene at all.
Nothing.
And then there's a helicopter. The special forces guys fly away in the helicopter.
Yep.
And we kind of get the scene where it's like, come with us. And they're like, no, and that's it. It's not like scene in the original one where Jed's like, you know why I can't. It's so weird because we complain about the original movie being so paper thin and so rushed. And this one, it was worse.
They took it to an extra paper thin degree. Like it's half paper thin. It's so weird.
Right. And then at the end, they address the issue of why didn't more people join them? Well, tons of people have joined them now. And now we're going to check the final box and go ahead and raid the prison camp like in the original movie.
Yeah.
But it like ends with them raiding the prison camp with an obvious nod to like, we're totally doing a sequel.
Yeah. Oh, there's more open. And also, I just have
more
to point.
Open. The other one was like cut and dry. This is the end. The war was over.
Nope.
Here it's called like Partisan Rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's got an American flag waving on it. And the implication is like the United States won in part because of what the Wolverines did.
Yes.
And this movie was like, sequel's coming, dude. Don't just will you do this amp you up? Get ready for Red Dawn 2.
Especially because Josh Peck, Matt the younger brother, like just takes Chris Hemsworth words like verbatim, and all of a sudden it cuts to him training like a new army. Like
yes,
they do that weird sort of like he's giving a speech to the enemy, but it transitions to he giving that speech to his new recruits. Like okay, this is where we're going now.
He's so, and Liz, no offense to this kid, but his face and his attitude, and he just, he's not a leader. He's not Chris Hemsworth.
Nope.
He's not. Now, here's the thing, too. What's a shame is that if Charlie Sheen back then was doing a scene like that, I would believe it.
Absolutely.
I could see Charlie Sheen being a leader.
Yep.
But no offense to this kid, not great casting. I would rather have Hunger Games in that role, really. I think that's what they messed up. If you flip-flop those characters, it would have made way more sense.
Yep.
Even though what made sense. Anyway, so
it does seem like the highlight was to make sure that the football star learned his lesson in that he can't be a superstar. He has to be a team player. And surprise, in an hour and a half, he learns that lesson. But then they tie it into like the opening of the sequel to Red Dawn 2, Red Dawn or whatever. You know, like he's a leader now because his brother got shot in the head for no reason. Like,
for no reason. All right. So,
yeah. Oh, ridiculous. Anyway. Yeah.
So that'll lead us to our pizza rating. So what we like to do on these is we do a pizza rating because we love pizza. So
yes.
Out of 8 slices of pizza is our rating. So an 8 full slices of pizza is the best movie ever. Sometimes we can add toppings or take away toppings or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So as we said last week, Mikey gave the original Red Dawn 4 out of 8 slices. I gave it 5 out of 8 slices. So Mikey, what do you give the reboot of Red Dawn, 2012's Thor starring Red Dawn? How many slices of pizza does it get?
I don't think it's a surprise when I say that this movie is terrible. Like, we've talked about it for about an hour now, and we've tried to find the highlights, but we're breezing through the recap of this movie because the movie itself is just a breeze anyway. It's an hour and 30 minutes, and I barely remember half of it. So, for my official pizza rating, I do give it 2 slices, and here's the reason it gets 2 slices. One, okay. Chris Hemsworth as Thor. I love that dude. Like, I will watch him read a recipe book. It doesn't matter. That dude is charismatic. I believe him has, I would almost say he's this generation's Patrick Swayze. Like, if they did a Point Break reboot, which I think they did, but if they did, like, he could just play all Patrick Swayze's roles as the leader, as the person that wins people over. I believe that. I'm on board with that.
I want to see Ghost now.
Exactly.
Chris Hemsworth now.
You believe it, though. I would buy that. I would watch that. So I get 1 slice for Chris Hemsworth, and then another slice just because we do get the updated Hollywood explosions and military and guns and effects, and it's a little bit better than the 1980s effects. As much as the 1980s were practical, and I appreciated it in our last episode, they did up the scale in terms of fighting and engagement and explosions, and that helped me pass the time between the scenes of they're doing this character development right now. Like, as much as that was weird, it was cool to see the functional grenades, the actual planes exploding, all that stuff. So that's why it gets 2 slices.
2 slices of pizza. All right. That is probably your lowest, right?
Oh, so far, yeah.
Yes. I think this will be my lowest too, because I am only going to give this 1 slice of pizza.
Yes, I love it.
1 slice with
no toppings,
with nothing. This is like, this is a slice of pizza that got stuck to the top of the box from the delivery. I mean, this is the one. This is a pizza you call back and complain about. I mean, without nostalgia goggles, without me even loving the original Red Dawn, this movie is decidedly terrible. It is just. Doesn't make sense. If you never, like you said, if you never saw the original Red Dawn, you wouldn't know half of what was going on, and the other half doesn't make any sense anyway.
Nope.
So the 1 slice is the same slice that you have. The 1 slice is because Chris Hemsworth does his best, and he can't help it. He can't help what he was in. I'm glad. I was actually glad to find that this was pre-Thor. I'm glad to find. Yeah, I was glad to find that stuff out.
Yes.
Because it wasn't like a what the heck are you doing?
There you go.
Type decision. It was like this was one of his earliest Hollywood movies he ever did. It just came out way after. Came out like 2 years after Thor, I think. So
yeah, but didn't come out till after he was famous. So that makes sense.
So it's just I can see why they shelved it initially. I don't even have words. Just listen to everything I said earlier. This movie's terrible. It's terrible.
It is terrible.
I don't even think you could MST3K it.
No, because there's not enough empty space to put in jokes. They move at a fast clip. It's like, here's this scene, here's the next scene. Let's go.
Oh, man. So,
do you think they'll make a sequel, though? We did say that they're leaving it open for another one.
Never. No. No. I mean, it's been 8 years already. If they were going to do it, they would have done it. It's just not good. If they wanted to do a reboot of this, they really should have done not a reboot, but they should have taken that original script, that 12 Soldiers script we told everyone about last week, where it was supposed to be like Lord of the Flies set in the near future with America being invaded. Because if you put stuff in the near future, you can totally change the geopolitics of the world. So nothing has to make sense at all.
Absolutely. And the original was supposed to be anti-war, and that's a little bit more fitting for our current times, you know?
Yes, it's very fitting for our current times. So that's part of the problem too. The note of it just does, in our current era, the way things are now compared to they were in 1984, a 1984 style movie just does not work in our era right now. So that's part of the disconnect too.
I'm with you.
So anyway,
our lowest rating so far.
Two slices for Mikey. The lowest rating so far. You did not do a good job rebooting Red Dawn.
No.
Goodness gracious. I highly don't recommend you watch this movie. Just go watch the 1984 one again.
It's
a time capsule, and it's much more fun, better acted. And as thin as it is, it's a way better time than this. This is just decidedly terrible. Anyway,
I agree 100%.
But we don't like to be negative on this podcast, but sometimes stuff stinks. So anyway, we want to thank you guys so much for continuing to listen. And I believe that Mikey has a special thanks to someone from our mailbag. Do we have a mailbag?
We have a mail response. This comes from an older episode. This is in response to, speaking of reassumptions, we did a reassumption of A Knight's Tale. And this is an email response from one of our fans named John Jordan. And I'm going to read this verbatim just because it's eloquent and it's perfect. But here we go. So, coming from John Jordan, an email that we got, it says, "Shocked in bold. Shocked, capital letters. Shocked is the best word to describe my reaction this morning when listening to the reassumptions of A Knight's Tale. The entire show was a buildup of hype and joy, with both of you diving into what one would expect would be a level of positivity that we offer." We do offer positivity on this podcast. "As always, this kept me on the edge of my seat for the entire car ride. However," all caps again, "a smile and laughter quickly turned into an audible, 'You have got to be kidding me,' when Kevin gave the outlandish rating of 6 out of 8 slices for A Knight's Tale. How does one who grew up going to Renaissance fairs and coined this the Renaissance Fair movie give it only 6 out of 8 slices?" John Jordan, you're speaking my mind. Kevin, do you have any response to your 6 out of 8 slices for A Knight's Tale?
Oh my goodness. That was so long ago. I forget what I said, but hey, well, 6 out of 8 is not a bad slice rating at all.
Especially after the slice rating we just gave this reboot of Red Dawn.
Yes. And the original Red Dawn that I love, I gave 5 out of 8. I'm a tough critic. What can you say?
Hey,
that's the only response I have is, hey, I'm a tough movie critic.
I get it.
Knight's Tale is great. I like it a lot. 6 out of 8 is a very good rating for me. So I guess just know that when Kevin's rating stuff, just look at all my past ratings and you can kind of get an idea of what I'm tough on stuff. It's I'll nitpick away. So yeah.
I do think that me and John Jordan are coming from the younger generation. We grew up more with this movie. I think we talked about that in the episode, so we do have a love for it. But I will add in the rest of this email for John Jordan because it reflects my opinion. I respect your 6 out of 8, but I think I gave it 8 out of 8, and I stand by it because, like John Jordan says, from the classic one-liners to the joy of victory to a Shakespearean romance that rivals some of the greatest love stories, this movie has something for everyone. Not to mention the star-studded cast that is perfectly tailored just as one of Jocelyn's dresses. While I may be disappointed with the rating, this may be one of my favorite epics to date. So he does salute us in our going back and watching it and talking about it. But he and I are on the different team where we have a little bit of a softer heart for it. So
hey, well, John, I really appreciate the feedback.
Yes.
Thank you for writing in and letting us know how you feel. I respect your opinion. you can,
but you stand by your 6x8. Okay.
I stand by my 6x8. You can have my extra 2 slices of pizza.
Yeah.
There you go.
Fair enough.
I'll share. Everything's fine.
John are going to pig out on pizza. I like
you're
it.
You guys are going to pig out on pizza. It's a good movie. 6 out of 8 is a movie that I'll gladly watch anytime. So if I'm giving it above 4, I like it.
True.
So just so you know, but I will be tough. Did I put any toppings on it? Maybe I put toppings on. I can't remember.
We'd have to go back and check. I don't think so. I think it was just a solid 6. I think I put eight slices with all the toppings because I am, like John Jordan, I am partial to this movie. But,
yeah,
you know, that's nostalgia goggles.
Yeah, nostalgia goggles will do that. I've been called out too for nostalgia goggles plenty of times on this podcast. So, but anyway, thanks. And hey, if any of you guys out there want to let us know what's going on, we will read your feedback on the podcast.
Yeah.
So you can hit us up on all the social medias at Assuming Pod. That's Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also Gmail us, as John did, at assumingpositions@gmail.com. We want to thank you guys so much for listening. As we've said before, the support means so much to us. We've gotten some really decent numbers lately. Again, we thank you, thank you, thank you. The best thing you can do for us is to, wherever you listen to our podcast, we're out there on so many different platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Go in there and rate us, write a review, give us 5 stars, thumbs up, whatever the platform allows. And also tell a friend, hey, there's these local guys who have a podcast and you can listen to it. Even if you're not local to the Texas area, you're local to the world.
Yeah, it's internet local. Yeah.
Yes, internet local. So we thank you guys so much. And we also thank not Scott for our equipment, Brad for our announcing, and Jazzar for our music. I did that in a different order, but I still did it. So
it still counts.
It still counts. So thank you guys so much. Don't go watch the Red Dawn reboot. Go watch Thor, any of the Thor movies. What else is a good Hemsworth movie that isn't a Thor movie?
I was going to do Josh Peck. Go watch The Wackness. It's a weird indie film that is not this Disney iteration of Josh that you know and love. Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. And go watch Hunger Games. I mean, but basically, go ahead and IMDb this movie.
Yes.
Look at the cast and watch any of their other movies.
Any of the other ones. Don't watch this one. Go watch the original. Go Wolverines. Yes. But 1984 Wolverines.
Wolverines! 1984 only.